Imagine being trapped on a Ferris wheel at night, peering through binoculars at your own apartment window, only to see yourself inside with someone else. This haunting scene from Sputnik's Sweetheart captures the novel's essence. We are all separated from each other, and even from ourselves, by invisible boundaries we cannot cross. Like the Soviet satellite that carried the dog Laika into endless orbit, Murakami's characters circle each other in their own emotional trajectories, close enough to see, but too distant to touch. They become cosmic travelers, forever longing for connections they can never fully achieve. The story unfolds through three characters caught in a triangle of unrequited desire: Sumire, a bohemian aspiring writer; Mew, a sophisticated businesswoman 17 years her senior; and an unnamed narrator, a pragmatic schoolteacher. Their orbital dance, the narrator loves Sumire, who loves Mew, who cannot love anyone physically, creates a meditation on loneliness that has resonated with readers worldwide, from teenagers navigating their first heartbreaks to celebrities like Phoebe Bridgers and David Bowie. When Sumire falls for Mew, the impact is immediate and total, as if she were crossing a field when, bang, a bolt of lightning zapped her right in the head. This tornado of desire flattens everything in its path, including Sumire's identity. The wild, disheveled writer transforms completely. She adopts expensive navy blue dresses, gets a professional haircut, applies careful makeup. She quits smoking, learns Italian and English, and takes driving lessons, all to align with Mew's sophisticated world. Most significantly, she abandons writing, her lifelong passion. What makes this transformation poignant is that Sumire doesn't see it as sacrifice. Each change feels necessary, a step closer to the woman she loves. Yet with each adaptation, she drifts further from her authentic self, the messy, passionate person who lived on her own terms. "I want to be with Mew more than I want to write," she admits, revealing how profound and potentially destructive her love has become. Haven't we all reshaped ourselves for someone else's gaze? Sumire's journey asks, how much can we change before becoming unrecognizable to ourselves? "I'm empty," Mew confesses. "I may look like Mew Hayashi, but it's not really me. 14 years ago, I was split in two forever. Since then, this me has been living on this side. My other self is living in that world." Throughout the novel, characters encounter boundaries between different states of being, invisible walls between reality and dreams, presence and absence, connection and isolation, forming the story's philosophical core. Mew's experience on the Ferris wheel represents the most literal boundary crossing. Trapped overnight, she watches herself with a man she's avoided. This trauma splits her in two. The remaining Mew loses her sexuality, fertility, and musical talent, her hair turning white overnight. Her other half remains on the other side. Sumire explores similar themes, seeing knowing and not knowing as Siamese twins. In recurring dreams, she climbs an endless staircase to meet her dead mother, who vanishes before speaking. When Sumire disappears from a Greek island, the narrator theorizes she may have gone over to the other side, suggesting boundaries between worlds might be permeable, though crossing them means abandoning the known world. "We're wonderful traveling companions, but in the end, no more than lonely lumps of metal on their own separate orbits." Each character exists on their own emotional island. The narrator established boundaries since childhood, finding refuge in books and music. Mew lives in isolation after being split in two, viewing herself as merely a shadow. Sumire, despite her outward energy, inhabits a tiny apartment filled with books rather than furniture, living alone. This isolation culminates when Sumire acts on her desire for Mew. After months together, Sumire reaches for her one night, confessing, "I really like you," while unbuttoning Mew's pajamas. Despite mental willingness, Mew's body remains unresponsive. Since that thing happened to me 14 years ago, she explains, I haven't been able to give myself to anyone. As Mew comforts the sobbing Sumire, she realizes they are wonderful traveling companions, but in the end, no more than lonely lumps of metal on their own separate orbits, perfectly capturing the novel's theme that we travel alongside others, but ultimately remain on separate paths. After her failed physical connection with Mew, Sumire vanishes mysteriously, wearing only silk pajamas and flip-flops. The evidence is stark. Footprints and sand leading nowhere, a half-drunk glass of water, and warm bedsheets. This disappearance mirrors earlier stories that troubled Sumire. A woman found dead only when neighbors noticed her cat's strange behavior. And Sumire's childhood gray tabby that exhibited peculiar behavior around an old pine tree before climbing into its branches and vanishing like smoke. These parallel disappearances suggest vanishing becomes a response to unbearable emotional pain or impossible situations. When human connection proves elusive and desire finds no fulfillment in the physical world, disappearance becomes the only viable escape. The narrator's theory that Sumire has gone over to the other side reframes her disappearance from tragedy to transcendence, a transformation into another state where normal reality's rules no longer apply. 6 months after Sumire's disappearance, the narrator spots Mew driving in Tokyo. Her white hair and icy expression reveal her transformation, an empty shell devoid of the vitality that once attracted Sumire. The narrator continues his life despite Sumire's absence. At the Acropolis, he feels an incomparable loneliness, seeing his future as desolate as the surface of a deserted planet. He realizes how Sumire had kept him tethered to the world through their unique connection. He reflects on how we each possess a special something available only at certain times, like a small flame that lucky ones cherish before it's extinguished. To reconnect with memories of Greece and Sumire, he listens to Mozart's Lieder, feeling their hearts momentarily unite like a farmhouse light glimpsed from a night train, briefly preserved when you close your eyes. Despite exploring isolation and impossible connection, Sputnik's Sweetheart suggests that even partial understanding offers redemption. Though characters cannot fully connect, their attempts create profound meaning. This redemptive understanding appears when the narrator defends Carrot, his girlfriend's son, caught shoplifting. Later in a coffee shop, as the narrator shares his experiences and childhood loneliness, Carrot begins to look at him with interest, a wordless connection across generations. When Mew reveals her Ferris wheel story, she shares a closely guarded secret. Though this doesn't change her condition, it creates intimacy. The narrator, finding no words, simply holds her, realizing he loves both versions of Mew. In a universe of lonely satellites, understanding becomes gravity, drawing us together while maintaining the distance necessary for orbit. This quiet redemption doesn't erase loneliness, but transforms it into something bearable, even beautiful. Perhaps this is why we reach for one another, despite knowing we can never fully connect. Like Sputniks orbiting in darkness, sending signals outward, hoping someone will receive them.